Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. I'm delighted that you have joined me. And we're going to be discussing a subject that is near and dear to my heart. And what is that subject? It is the development of intuitive psychic abilities. I've been involved in the work of mind for so many years, and it always pleases me when I have the opportunity to chat with someone who has gone through their own journey of self-discovery relative to their own capabilities and their own talents. My guest from England, yes, we're traveling across the Atlantic to England. We're going to be chatting with Phil Webster. Now, this is a young man that has quite an interesting background. He is obviously a writer, having produced his first book. He also is a meditation teacher. And to his surprise, he's finding himself on a path of developing mediumship skills that are going to take him on a journey in life that I don't know that he was aware that he was going to be experiencing. I will welcome from England, Phil Webster. Phil, your book is A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here.
Phil, your life is a patterning, and I told you this before we began our conversation on the show, that so often we go through journeys and we are made aware of certain things, but we sort of have behaviors that obliterate our awareness. But it's as if we have to go through boot camp special to finally wake up to who we are. And this, when I started reading your book, Letting Glow, I found that this was very, very true in your case. Your journey to the awareness that you have talents of the mind that enable you to do readings for people, seeing things about them, and actually being aware of those on the other side that they're trying to communicate with. All of this was not in a million years what you expected your life to evolve into. Am I correct?
Absolutely. So it was a catalyst that I'm sure we'll get to that really sort of triggered me to look back over events that have happened over the years. And these events would be few and far between throughout my life that could be considered unexplained or esoteric or kind of whatever word you would use for it. But I wouldn't really take much notice of them. I would think, okay, well, that was, I don't know what that was. And then I would get on with, you know, the practical life that I was living. But these things would seem to come up every few years. And I was living, as we just spoke before we started, a fairly, I suppose, I hesitate to use the word egotistical life, but I was very kind of wrapped up in myself through my 30s, and, you know, as some of us are. And as I'm now, my mid-40s, and then I've really gone down this path. Yeah, it's been an awakening and a learning experience at the same time.
When you were quite young, and I was intrigued by this particular recall of yours, you were about 8 or 9 years of age, and you were playing with your friend, and you said that you knew who you were, but it was like there was another you somewhere. And of course, you didn't have the language at that time to describe it, and your buddy looked at you like, okay, I don't know. I don't understand what you're talking about. And then you got busy with something else. This, as you said, is something that we often discard. We will have these experiences when we are younger, and we just sort of go, okay, that's nice. Well, when you're young, watch a child, you'll find their attention span is maybe about a second and a half. Sadly, too many adults have evolved back to childhood where their attention span is just as brief. But the thing is, it is very, very real. It is something you have got better things to be concerned with. You just accept it. You don't worry about it. And then you found, when you got older, that there were books on esoteric items that you came across. Anything about ghosts? I love this one, vampires. Boy, the movies have made a lot of money on that subject. And you have all of these different concepts that just really attracted your attention. That stayed with you, including learning about lucid dreaming, astral projection. All of these things were there. They were like little ticklers, little recalls. Remember this, remember this, remember this. This happens to so many people. And it's not until life circumstances reach a point where we go, maybe there's something to this. When was that maybe there is something to this moment that occurred with you?
Well, thank you. Yeah, that no one's actually described that like that before, and I really appreciate it that you brought that up. But most people that I've spoken to about the book have been interested in the more sort of sensational aspects to it. So, yeah, thank you for that. And that was a good reminder for me as well. It was like that. It would seem that every few years something would come up, and then, like you said, I would look back on them. But I didn't really know what to do with them until an event just around the end of the pandemic. So just to give you a bit of backstory, I grew up in a place called the Isle of Wight, which is a very rural, small place. And I moved away from there when I was around 20 and traveled around the world, things like that. And my mum always stayed there, so she lived alone for the last 20 years of her life. And then, of course, we all went through 2020, and I kept away trying to do the right thing. I was based in London by this point. I'd just come back to England a few years ago. And so I hadn't seen my mum for a while, but we would FaceTime every day. And all of these kind of esoteric experiences and this and that weren't really on my radar at this point. You know, the things had happened in the past, but it wasn't really what I was concentrating on. So anyway, so we had a FaceTime call towards just, well, right at the start of 2021. So there was a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of COVID. But again, I was still trying to do the right thing. We were in another lockdown. And I kind of knew everyone in her immediate circle that lived nearby. We didn't have any family around there or anything like that. And I called her on this particular evening, and it was probably the third call of the day, and it was quite late at night. And when she answered the call, I saw her as she picked up the phone, but I also could see a man leaning in from the other side of the screen. And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He was possibly late 60s, thinning gray hair, glasses. He was kind of gaunt in the face. And as she moved away, he went out of shot. And I was kind of taken aback because, you know, again, we were in a lockdown. And I said to her, well, who's that? And she said, well, who's what? And that, again, just took me back. And I said, well, I just saw someone. I just saw a man. And she didn't know what I was talking about. And I kind of questioned her a few times on it. And eventually I just kind of gave up and we just had a conversation. I thought, well, I must have been mistaken. You know, I could always tell when there was someone with her. She would sort of act differently. Her whole demeanor would change. She would speak posher and all those kind of things. And I believe that there was no one with her. And I just put it down to myself being mistaken. I went to bed that night. And then the next morning, I got a phone call from one of the neighbors that my mom had a heart attack and passed away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When that occurred, and you and your mother were extremely close, there was a very, very strong bond between the two of you, even though you were sometimes thousands of miles away. Like you said, you did the FaceTime. Now, here you are in England. You were miles away from your mom, too. And because of the lockdown, you weren't able to be there. But in the book, and I thought this was really very, very astute of you to eventually come to the realization that you were seeing this man's face because it was to let you know your mother was going to be passing on. And this is something that I know in my many years of experience that has not been a surprise. There are points of information you'll get. There will be little signals, little signs, and you know that a person is going to be leaving soon. They're going to be vacating their body. They're going to be moving on. And this is something that really set you back when you became aware of that. Now, that didn't mean that you haven't missed her and that this is something that's significant, but your mother, you finally, a friend said to you, why don't you ask for a sign to see if your mom is still with you or still around, so to speak? And you did. Yeah. What was the sign that you got?
So, I didn't really know what to do with his experience. I hadn't recognized the man. He hadn't looked like a family member, but I was convinced that there was nobody physically with her. And I would tell people about this, and depending on their own beliefs, there were some people, well, obviously that was somebody letting you know that she was about to pass. Others essentially didn't believe me, or they sort of attributed it to some sort of post-trauma from grief or something like that. But then, yeah, a couple of people said, well, hey, you know, that was a sign. You should ask for more signs. And I was working on a film at the time. And the film that I was working on, trying to keep this brief, was a sequel to another movie. So it was one of these big superhero things. And it was a sequel to a movie called Doctor Strange. And on the film set, somebody who I told this story to said, yeah, you should ask for a sign. I went home that day, and I just moved into a new apartment with my fiance. And I said, okay, let's try this. So I said, Mom, if you're around, can you give me a sign? And while I was tidying the apartment, I was putting away Blu-rays, you know, like DVDs. And I had a lot of these things, and the one movie that was missing out of all of them was the movie to the sequel that was the original movie to the sequel that I was working on. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. Anyway, I went about, you know, tidying up the flat. And somewhere later in the day, I found this film, and it was on top of, it was in a completely different place than where it should have been. And it was on top of a pile of books. So I'd got the title of the movie was the same one that I was working on. Underneath that was a book, and the name of the author was poking out, which said Maureen, which was my mum's name. And underneath that book was another book, and the title of that book was poking out, saying Living. So I got the movie I was working on, Maureen and Living, right after I'd asked for a sign. So I thought, okay, well, depending on which side of the coin you look at, I thought that was an interesting one.
I delighted in your comment that the universe had decided it was time for you to wake up, grow up, and you got a harsh metaphysical slap in the face. And this is not unusual. I'm going to stop and say, I've heard this from so many different people, men and women both, that have said, all of a sudden, I hit the skids. Everything went opposite of what I had thought was going to plan out, was going to work out. And they get the metaphysical slap in the face in one form or another. You thought you were losing your mind. You go to see a therapist. You go to see a therapist. And his name is Chuha. He listens to you.
Yeah.
And you say, gee, am I schizophrenic? He said, you're not schizophrenic. You're too old to be schizophrenic. And I just chuckled at that. But he recognized you. He said, you're a shaman. He listened to everything you said. And instead of proclaiming you nuts and saying you were going to need 500 years of therapy, he said, you're a shaman. You need to understand certain things. You're learning, and I'm paraphrasing, you're learning a new language. That stunned you, didn't it?
It did. And this was a few years prior to my mom passing. And this was such a powerful experience that I had that I truly thought that I was losing my grip on reality. And not to take this down a dark path, but to the point that something shifted in my awareness it's impossible to explain, but I suddenly could see time as non-linear, and everything fell away. I couldn't just sort of drift off and think about my thoughts of the future or memories of the past. It was just suddenly now. You know, people talk about being in the moment of now, and this was that, you know, times a thousand. it was overwhelming. And I went to a couple of regular doctors, and they just diagnosed me with psychosis. And then eventually I found this psychiatrist, and yeah, he did. He started using words like mystic and talking about spiritual awakenings. And I didn't know really anything about this stuff at the time. I just wanted to get back to the herd, you know. I thought I was going out of my mind. And I just wanted to, you know, get back on the train, go to work, and forget about everything. And this was one of these instances, like I said, that after my mom passed that I looked back on, that I thought, okay, well, clearly there have been these signs all along here, and this is something that I should take notice of. But I have to say that was a profound shift of awareness, and it even prior to my mom passing, that definitely altered me and shifted my perspective on things. But again, I didn't know what to do with it. I just kind of took it on board and then carried on with my regular life when I kind of got back on track again. But yeah, in hindsight, it all seems like this was leading to the path that I'm on now.
Very much so. Also, something that occurred with you, and this doesn't happen with everyone, but it does occur. And you were seeing an orange grid, and you were getting, I like to call them downloads, of information, and you said, this is way beyond anything I could possibly come up with. And this is not unusual. This is not unusual, but you've said something that's very significant, and that is, you didn't know what to do with it. It is like being dumped into a universal gift shop where you have all kinds of doodads and goodies, and you go, well, what am I going to do with all of this? I have no clue. Do I push a button? Do I talk to it? Do I throw it up in the air? Do I stomp it? What do I do with it? You don't know. And it is something that takes an acclimation and even a supportive environment. And that's why our discussion, I think, is so important about your book, because letting glow, you are letting people know that it took you a while and it's a work in progress. You are constantly going to be aware of certain things. But then there are those serendipitous moments, there's those coincidences that keep giving you little hints as you go along. And you talk about how, in your book, how being able to understand the terminology spirit guides, what that means, how important meditation is. And you give some beautiful meditations here throughout your book that I think is very, very great. But you bring up some practical information that I think is very important. You brought up Marjorie Hines Woollacott. She's an American neuroscientist. She also was a professor. She was very down to earth and very, very practical. Now, she wrote a book that you came across, and in it, she made a point of saying, consciousness precedes matter. Now, those three words, consciousness precedes matter, is not something most people are even going to give 5 seconds worth of attention to. But you did, because you were being given these little dots of connection as to what was happening to you. How did these books change your thinking and your perception of what you were going through?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, hers was a big one for me. And I think there are plenty of people in the sort of scientific communities that are, well, talking about this now and having their own experiences that are taking them away from that almost scientific dogma, you know, and that it doesn't make sense anymore when people are having these sort of spiritual experiences, for want of a better term, that they need to look somewhere else. But yeah, that one really resonated with me, that term, as learning about meditation, and meditation really helped me get through that period that we were just talking about, that I went to see this therapist. He gave me a few very grounding meditations that that just brought me back, essentially, over a period of time. And then it kind of started making sense to me, as you talked about earlier, that experience as a kid of sort of realizing that there was a separation, you know, that I'm not my thoughts, or that I'm something beyond my thoughts. And that's kind of what I started to learn about with, again, learning about meditation and being able to step back and not get caught up in the emotions and the rest of it, and kind of realize that you're this consciousness that's able to watch the thoughts. And that really tied in with everything comes from a thought, right? So a practical way that I sort of talk about it in the book is, if we wanted to build a chair, for example, then we would first see the chair in our mind's eye, and then we would have to put that into motion to make it, and then physically this chair would transpire. But essentially it started as a thought, which makes me think that everything starts as a thought. Every conversation, every practical thing that we do starts its life as a thought. And I think that's really what that's sort of my basic understanding of what she was talking about, and probably said it a lot more eloquently than I did. Yeah.
I agree. You have had some health challenges, and during 2021, which was COVID period, then you had some challenges there, but you ended up evolving during that year to going to a community church. It was called the Barnes Healing Church. Now, spiritualism, as we have come to know it in America, and this goes back, you know, quite a bit of time in the 1800s, but spiritualism was very, very strong in England. And I had the good fortune to meet a gentleman who, during the Second World War, was trained by some of the finest mediums in England and would speak to an audience of thousands who, during the war, were wondering about their loved ones. You know, were they alive? Had they gone to the other side? Did they have a message for them? This was so strong, and it still is strong in England. Well, in Europe, you have the Celtic culture. You have so much shamanism that is going through what I'd call a Renaissance period. People are wanting to reconnect with the roots of the cultures that they are in. And this is becoming more and more available to people through the written word, through programs, you know, whether it is a YouTube special or it is something that is done in a movie, doesn't make any difference. But the theme is the same. And that is, there's that which we consider the unknown and the paranormal, but actually it's right here with us, ever present at all times in all places. And that is something that a lot of people are feeling much more comfortable with. Whereas before, 20, 30 years ago, you could hardly mention the word psychic or shamanism without having some kind of an upheaval. But that's not the case anymore. What happened at the Barnes Healing Church?
Yeah, I love the way you put that. And just to, before I tell that story, another thing that I'd like to say is that we've all got these terms, you know, for like a gut feeling or intuition, or you can't quite put your finger on something. But then, like you say, when you talk about that as, you know, clairsentience, claircognizance, something like that, then people used to look at you like you're nuts. But I think now it's becoming more commonplace that you can have these conversations and people don't easily dismiss it. But yeah, but as for the spiritualist church, this was something that I didn't know of these. But there are many spiritualist churches in the UK, especially around London, where I'm based, in every corner of London. And I happened to walk past one evening, a couple of months after my mum passed away, and I just stopped, and I'd walked past this place maybe 30 times already. And I saw that they were having a demonstration of mediumship on a Sunday evening. And I thought, all right, well, let's give this a go. Let's, you know, in light of everything else that has sort of happened around my mum passing and signs that I was getting and things like that, I thought, well, I'll go show up there and see what happens. So no money exchanged hands. It was just the lady was there that evening, and there was maybe 15, 20 people in the audience. And she just went around each person and gave them information about loved ones that have passed on. And even at that point, I was kind of skeptical because I'd never seen a demonstration of mediumship before. But she was getting affirmation after affirmation. Each person was confirming, like, you know, names, descriptions, places. And by the time she got to me, I was kind of convinced. And then when she did get to me, she immediately started talking to me about me being a voice for spirit. I hadn't really heard of the term properly before. And I was like, okay, interesting. But I was kind of there hoping to hear from my mum, you know. And she talked for a good while about this. And then eventually she did say, well, I've got a lady that's recently passed. And her accent changed. This was the thing for me. This lady had like a typical London accent. And then it changed to a Northern English accent, which is what my mum had. And just the words that she used and the way that she used them, I was like, well, that's my mum, you know. And it was very brief, but it was just letting me know that she was all right and that she was still around. And it was life-changing. It was life-changing. Like, nothing but that, yeah.
It is amazing when these events occur and how they occur. And again, it's like that steel-toed metaphysical boot that says, okay, you're ready. Come on, stop in, pay attention. Yeah. And you go, do I really want to do this? Okay, I'll go ahead and I'll do it. And these little nudges that come into. Now, in London, there actually is a College of Psychic Studies. And there are so many people that are committed and dedicated to this. And this has been a part of the English environment for a good deal of time. And you met a lovely woman by the name of Claire. Tell us how Claire influenced you. She ended up becoming quite a good friend.
She has, yes. Claire's been an amazing ally, forgive me, and mentor, I would say. So I just came across a book that Claire had wrote. I didn't know who she was. And again, this was weeks following my mum passing. And just the title got my attention. It was called What the Dead Are Dying to Tell Us, or to Teach Us, sorry. And strangely enough, I didn't know if Claire was American, English, or Australian, or wherever she was from. But immediately the book started. The opening chapter took place across the street from where I lived, in the cemetery right there. And, you know, London's a big place, and she could have been from anywhere in the world. So that kind of resonated with me immediately. I thought, what were the chances of that? And then I noticed pretty soon after that Claire was running a workshop at the College of Psychic Studies. And again, I didn't really know there were such places, especially with a name like that, you know. So I went along to her workshop. We hit it off. And I explained to her about some of the experiences that I had. And she was really one of the first people to explain to me what was going on. She was like, okay, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense. When I was telling her about what I believed was a download and waking up and seeing this grid and all of that, she was like, yeah, you know, like you said, this is quite a common thing, which to me was, I had no idea what was going on. She really sort of took me under her wing, and I've since learned a lot about mediumship from her at different workshops, and yeah, we've stayed in touch, and hopefully going to see her soon, yeah. Yeah.
You talked also in your book about how, with all of this that has evolved, you know, again, this isn't something that happened overnight. It wasn't just a little drop of something and then everything is magically transformed, like a Cinderella story or Fantasia or what have you. It doesn't happen that way. But there is so much that when we are in a position to be able to communicate with people that don't look at it as woo-woo. Say, all right, tell me what you've gone through. And just like Claire, she didn't make a big to-do about anything. She just said, all right, this is something you need to know. You had the medium at the church tell you one day you're going to be up front standing on the stage and doing what I'm doing, even though that's something that in your mind is you're out of your mind. You just don't know what you're talking about. That is something that you go through. Because we all have preconceptions. We forget that we're made of star stuff. And we are made with capabilities that until we wake up to them, and we have to live life. And this is something you bring out, and I thought you brought it up beautifully, how there is a balance. And it is something that we need to deal with everyday life. But we also need to understand that we have this awareness that there's something greater than ourselves and that we have an opportunity to explore the unseen It will not bring harm. It will not cause devastation in our lives. It really is going to be liberating because it makes us aware of something. It's very difficult to put into words, but it makes us aware that we do have a purpose and that our life, for all of the experiences, good, bad, and ugly, that maybe we've gone through, there is value. They're like little golden nuggets of experience that we can incorporate. And that's what you've done with your book, Letting Glow. You have put those gold nuggets out for everybody to see. They're spit and polished. And you say there's a lot of things I'm not too happy with because that really I didn't have very good judgment. However, at the same time, I wouldn't be where I am if I hadn't gone through them. And this is the truth. This is the truth. And I've yet to meet anyone who is really skilled in the use of the tools of the mind that do not recognize and appreciate that in one way or another. You don't have to like. You don't have to like the ugliness of life. It could get downright ugly. But you can leverage every experience you have so that it will serve and present examples and information to others. And that's what you've done, Phil Webster. Now, I'm delighted your first name is P-H-I-L-L. It's two L's. And you have your own website. And that is, of course, very simple. It is your name, philwebster.com. And people will find out about your book, and you're going to be writing another book. And this is something that you have evolved into that has shifted and changed a lot, because for you to put down with the integrity what you've gone through, your wonderful story about your mom and the sad side, if you will, of her passing on. However, you've grown as an individual in such a way and manner that you are open to now looking at, how do I serve? How do I take these skills and utilize them? And you are an actor. You engage in all kinds of different fantasies, but you become aware of the fact that what was called the veil of between those that have passed on and those that are here, is extraordinarily thin. There are those awareness points that when you come to understand that, then you have a different perspective on life overall. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and even now, I mean, I'm despite all these experiences that I've read about, it's taken me this long to kind of realize them, and it's a learning process. And I'm sure everyone on this journey will agree with the same. I'm sure you would say the same. Despite experience, we're all still learning. But I feel very much at the start of my journey. And at the least, if my book can help somebody understand these experiences, if they haven't helped themselves. Obviously, there's an element of dealing with grief in the book, but we all deal with that in our own ways. But yeah, these experiences that come up, they can make you feel like you're kind of going nuts here and there. And with perspective, with time and hindsight, then it seems to become apparent that that there was a bigger picture to it after all. And, you know, I write these things, but I'm still very much getting caught up in my practical life. I have to pay the rent. I have to do this and that. But it takes, you know, to just that moment to sit back, throughout the day, to just take 5 minutes to yourself and breathe and meditate. Then it keeps you kind of in tune with the bigger picture, I believe. But yeah, I'm very much learning still.
I appreciate what you've done, Phil Webster. I think you have created something here that it could benefit anyone that is saying, I'm having these experiences. I don't understand what they are. It will give them, if you will, a written conversation of camaraderie, in that they need to know they're not alone. They need to know that other people have gone through these experiences and that they are going to have a journey of their own. Letting Glow, G-L-O-W, It's a guide to intuition, spirituality, and living consciously. You have some delightful meditations that you share in the book. Phil Webster, it has been a pleasure having you as a guest. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure and an honor. And I feel like I've learned a lot just in this conversation here. So thank you very much.
It is my pleasure. We're saying goodbye to Phil Webster, but I'll be back with you in just a moment. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. All right, who have we got coming up on the show tomorrow evening? We're going to be talking about love letters to water. Claudel Morgan is going to be my guest. And then how to adjust yourself and avoid the chiropractor. That's on Friday evening with Dr. Metzger. Have you ever heard of a chiropractor that wanted to show you how to adjust yourself? I haven't. Well, we are going to be in for an interesting conversation, I think. And then Armed and Female 2, Paxton Quigley, 30 Years Behind Bars, Dr. Karen Getney. This is a woman doctor who actually served as a prison physician for 30 years. Her story is incredible. And then Plant Communication with Jen Frey, The Afterlife, A Journey 2. This is going to be with an Australian. Yes, we are going to be having that opportunity to talk with an Aussie, Stephen Pa Chong. And I think you're going to find the conversation an interesting one. Life-enhancing anxiety, Kirk Schneider. Well, we've just got so much going on. Now, I want you to be aware of the fact that I'm not going to be able to respond to any kind of calls while I'm not going to be available in studio. And we have just got such an intense month. We are going to be at the Embassy Suites in Bellevue, Washington, on the last weekend in July. And I'm very excited about that. So you can go to my website and you'll find the information posted there on my calendar. And also you're going to find it on the network page. And then I've got good news. The video for the first television show, Human Trafficking, is uploaded and is now available on YouTube. And I will have the information also. It is on my video section on my website, DelphiInternational.com. And in my next newsletter, I will be sending out those links. There are those video links that are in the present newsletter for the month of June. Those links are there. And for the month of July, those links are also included in my newsletter so that you can connect directly with the YouTube channel. And as soon as we're in a position to do so, we're going to have also the talks that I've given at the Psychic Spectrum. Those are also going to be uploaded and available for your viewing pleasure as well. So there is so much that's happening. It's really quite an exciting period. And I know that there is so much going on around the world. And we are going to be having a very special program that is going to be coming up the next week, which is about on Warriors for Peace, which is about the return of wolves. Yes, Eli Frankovich, this is a researcher. We're going to be discussing how there's so many differing opinions and fears of the past. You know, it's amazing how we fear what we don't understand. And there's big, big, big concerns with ranchers and, you know, so many other aspects in the natural world. And we human beings have taken over so much of the planet that the animals actually don't have any place to go but within the cities or in the environments that will allow them to thrive. And that's where the national parks are so significant. People go into the parks, and I'm really surprised at how absolutely childlike and naive they are. I mean, when you hear stories about people in Yellowstone wanting to step into the boiling, you know, mud pots that are there, are you serious? I mean, this is not something you take lightly. You're not going to want to step in and get a body facial, thank you very much, because you won't survive. And there is so much that people just don't understand. And they go out into nature and they want everything to be hunky-dory. Well, nature, she is something that is not necessarily sweet and nice at different times. You have to respect her. And that is something that we are going to have to teach to every generation because they don't come in understanding. People just don't get it. Now, we're reintroducing here in the Pacific Northwest, we're reintroducing grizzly back into part of the wild environment, which I think is really a good idea. These animals really have a lot to do with harmony and balance. It's our ignorance, many times, that create the havoc because we do not understand enough about them. And it's like in my neighborhood, we have coyotes. And there are attitudes of people, well, just go out and kill them all. Poison them. Do whatever you can. Get rid of them. The thing is, coyotes serve a very good purpose. We have a lot of rats. We have a lot of mice around here. Whenever you have a forest environment, that is part of it. They keep those populations in check, as do the owls. We have owls that come in and we'll hear them, you know, talking their special language in sometimes the daylight hours. But they're hunting. They are looking for food, and the rodents are their primary source of food. And yes, they hunt at night, but they are out there, and it's just absolutely amazing when we start to understand the harmony of the world that we have around us. And that keeps the rodents in check. And it's very, very important. And you have to remember, the wildlife creatures, they don't have 7-Elevens on every corner. And they don't have grocery stores that they can go into where the food is wrapped and packaged for them. That's not the way the wild world works. So you have the eat and the be eaten. And that is everything from your carnivores to the tiniest of insects. There's all of this that is there. The balance and harmony is really significant because we are, in many respects, creating a toxicity that is affecting us in real time. And if we don't pay attention, well, guess what? We're not going to be around. It's very simple. We're part of the animal kingdom. And some people may take offense with that, but be offended if you want. The truth is that we're just as expendable as all forms of other life are. So we're supposed to be intelligent. Well, we act pretty stupidly so many times. But it seems like we have to go through those learning curves, and we have to go through them again and again and again. So it's up for us to be wise. One of the things that I wanted to share with you this evening, because of my guest, Phil Webster, I wanted to share a book with you. And if you ever have a chance to find it, I recommend, if you're interested in hearing from, quote-unquote, an authority figure. There was a man, and he's been gone for a long time now. His name was Bishop Pike. And he was in a very high positioning of his church. And it was his son's death that affected him so deeply. Now, this is a man that had risen through his church. He would not buy into anything that had to do with psychic phenomena. There was always a logical explanation for everything. But his life was turned around when his 20-year-old son, in 1966, committed suicide in New York City. Now, Bishop Pike was in charge of a very, very large church. He traveled all over the world. This is a man that was extremely brilliant. His son was a very troubled youngster, and he had gotten involved with drugs and had had, quote-unquote, mind trips, was having a very difficult time with the process of growing up into manhood. Bishop Pike tried to communicate with his son, but he was a busy professional man. This was something he had congregations that he had to tend to. He had meetings. He was like so many adults. We're busy working. And his son had been in many different schools, but he didn't do very well. When he got involved with drugs, then the spiral started going downwards quite significantly. Well, at the time, Bishop Pike, in the 60s, was in England, and he was in charge, and he had been a bishop already for 10 years, loved being engaged with Cambridge and other higher institutions of learning and giving talks and interacting with people. He loved his work. He really loved his work. Well, on February the 4th, it was a Friday, 1966, he's in England. His son had spent time with him in England and seemed to be doing quite nicely when he decided he was going to go back to New York City. His father was very concerned, but he's 20 years old. He's a man. Are you going to tell him what to do, how to do it? He wouldn't have listened anyway. But he told his dad, he said, no, I'm going to go back to New York City. Well, he fell in again with the company of people that were not, well, they're not of the quality of character and support that his son needed. But his son chose that. He ends up committing suicide. Bishop Pike in England had this odd feeling of something very, very bad had happened with his son, and he got the word. His son was dead. Well, he left, of course. And he left England, came to the United States, took care of all of the funeral processes. He had a secretary with him, and they were taking care of business to the best of their capacity. When he goes back to England, Bishop Pike has a flat. He's had for quite a long time. And he goes back to England, and when he opens the door, he finds that there are postcards that are on the floor. And they're arranged in very odd patternings. Now, these were postcards from his friend, from his son. There were 20 of them, face up, and this was 16 days after his son's death in his flat. He said, that's very odd, because nothing had been left on the floor before. Well, that wasn't the only thing that happened. His secretary, a woman that had worked with him for many, many years, her bangs on her forehead ended up being singed when she was asleep. No harm was caused to her. But how did that happen? And it was all about his son. His son was trying to communicate with his dad. When the communication finally was recognized by Bishop Pike, he started to explore the environments of the spiritualist churches. There was the Institute for Psychic Studies. There were so many different groups and organizations in England he became familiar with. He also became familiar with a gentleman called George Deasley. I had the privilege of meeting George Deasley a number of years ago. He was in his 80s at the time that I met him. Very, very gifted trance medium. But he is what I would call a conscious trance medium. And I really liked George. Incredibly gifted man. He performed before audiences of thousands during the Second World War. Very, very soft-spoken Englishman. Well, Bishop Pike ended up going to George for more than one session, and his son, Jim, would communicate through George Deasley, but it happened not just with George Deasley. And at the time that that occurred, George Deasley was in California. Well, Bishop Pike, because of the various experiences, and the book is called The Other Side. The Other Side. It was written in 1968. I hope you'd be able to find a copy. If so, I think if you read it, it would really bring home some significant points. Because Dr. Bishop Pike, when he would meet with different mediums, and when he met George Deasley, who was at the time living in Santa Barbara, when he would have these meetings with people, and his son would communicate information to him, and his son said, you know, more than once, there's no blame here. I made bad choices. There's no blame. But know that this is real and that I am communicating with you. And so there was so much that Bishop Pike was experiencing that he had to write the book, The Other Side. Because he felt of his positioning, of his reputation, he was willing to put it all on the line to let people know that not only is there life after death, but people go on learning and growing and being something that is so very, very important for us to realize, to recognize, and understand. So I wanted to share that with you because having been in the work of mind for most of my life, I find that there is so much that is miscommunicated. We've got all kinds of Hollywood movies, and my goodness, they were making movies about gypsies and psychics back in the 30s, the 1930s. Edward Robertson played a part in one movie where he was gifted with being able to see things happening and evolving and totally saddened by the fact that he couldn't understand why he had these gifts. These are things that people go through. And when you have a chance to talk to someone about this, when you have a chance to communicate what you're experiencing and you verbalize it, if you have the compatible environment that enables you to understand what you're going through, it makes all the difference in the world. Just like with my guest, Phil Webster. He goes to a psychiatrist fully thinking he's going to be put on some kind of medication or given a label of some kind, and he was given a label. But it wasn't the one he expected. He was given the label of shaman. And as a good old-fashioned English boy, he's going to say, or young man, he's going to say, huh, what? A shaman? Are you serious here? Yes, a shaman. Many of us have these talents and abilities, and we run away from them because we don't understand them. But they're very, very real. And it's meant to empower us, not disempower us. It's not something to be frightened of. It is something to be aware of. And that is why you will hear the admonitions of don't use alcohol, Don't do drugs. Why? Because it affects the nervous system. It literally can create a dumbing down process in the body, in the psyche. You see, your physical body is an electrical unit. Your nervous system is the freeway system with all of its, you know, off ramps that go throughout your entire body. When you don't eat well, when you do not sleep well, when you are not attentive to your well-being, your chassis is going to go through all kinds of problems. And I can't tell you how many times I have heard people say that often it's a physical illness, maybe a near-death experience, something that has created a shift inside of them that they otherwise would have totally ignored. And the reason that you have these, well, what do we want to call them? A metaphysical steel-toed boot that gives us a good swift kick? I think that's a nice description. At least it's vivid. But there you go. You see, you're a very significant part of life, every one of you that's listening to this program. There isn't a one of you that doesn't have that, what I call, star stuff inside of you. The universe we're in is so massive, and there are so many talents out there that are visualized, and we say, oh, I wish I could do such and such. Nah. To learn the disciplines and to understand what's going on with yourself, there needs to be, first of all, attention paid to what's happening. That's where, when you keep notes in a notebook, it makes all the difference in the world. Well, I know that we're just about out of time, but I wanted to share those thoughts with you because I think Phil Webster, don't forget his first name is spelled P-H-I-L-L. He is just quite very well spoken in his book, Letting Glow. If this is an arena of interest for you, if you've had unique experiences, I really think it's worth paying attention to. Donna Sebo here. And as we're closing out the show this evening, I am so excited about the television programs. We're finally getting them up on YouTube and on my video section on my website. And you can go in and check it out now. The second one, which is about super aging, is going to be aired soon. I want you to check that out. That is something, one show a month, one television show a month is evolving. And I'm so pleased that we are able to do this now, and we are airing the actual audios of those programs on my shows. And on the 30th, we had the one of the television programs that's been recorded. The audio of that is there, and it's in the archives. It also is in the player rotation on my station. And I want you to be aware of the fact that I'll keep you informed as we move along. But be sure to go to DelphiInternational.com and check out the video segment. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Whoever you are a light. Wherever you are, your light is needed. The more you can become aware of your gifts and your talents, and you can explore and expand them, you make a difference. You make a difference because all too many people in life don't even know where their switch is to turn their light on. You can be an example for them because you are the light. As I said earlier, you're made of star stuff. We all are. God bless. Be well. I'll be talking with you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.